The film we are about to discuss is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young, but had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they would see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Skeletal forms burn toxic green, vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Hello, I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Jenny.
And welcome to the 50th episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies.
We did it! Episode 50!
Somehow, some way, we've made it to episode 50. I'm so proud of us.
Me too. I mean, it has taken us like going on 2 years where had we actually managed to make this a weekly podcast like we were hoping, we would have reached this point a long time ago. But...
we would have reached it in the same year.
Yeah.
Right? There's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody needs like a little break, surely. Like a lot of podcasts only do like seasons where they'll do so long. It's very rare that anyone records like solidly for a year, especially if there's like co-hosts. If it's one person, maybe they can, because then they can just, you know, record on their own. But we have busy lives, Caitlin.
We do, and we have each other.
We do have each other.
I don't know what I would do if you were like, no, I can't do it this week. And I was like, right, it's just me on my own. I'd be like creaking crickets in the background.
Exactly.
Just me talking to myself.
And I'm not in, like, we're recording this, and I don't actually know when it's going to go out because I still haven't finished editing episode 48. Scream 2. I'm still halfway through Scream 2.
Scream 2. We're still in the throes of the series of sequels part 2.
The editing process, yes.
The editing process. I mean, someday it will come to an end. I don't know when. It's our longest running series.
Soon. I mean, in physical time.
Jenny's very busy.
I'm growing a small human in my uterus. That takes up a lot of time and energy.
He is. And I love that you've just announced that on our 50th anniversary. Yes. 50th anniversary. Could you imagine? We'd be like 90. Never mind.
Hey.
50th episode.
I'm still in my 30s. Leave me alone.
All right. You'd be a solid 86. And maybe we will be having a 50th anniversary episode.
I hope so,
Caitlin.
I love
it, Jenny. I hope so, too. We'll be in old lady homes, but the technology will be way better.
We could be in robot bodies
by
then.
I'm sorry. We're just glossing over your... Jenny just made sort of like a massive announcement, and I was wondering if you were going to announce it on the podcast, and I'm so glad you did on the 50th episode.
Yeah, day. 50th episode recording day. Why not? Let's start with that.
it's got a certain like charm to it, that name. Jenny is indeed growing a human, and not in like a creepy, like the brood way, but, you know, actually...
Yeah, fully, like in my uterus, and... It's happening.
Hurrah. I did suggest that we do a series of pregnancy horror films. And Jenny was like, I don't know about that.
That was like right when I was at the very beginning, because me and my husband had fertility treatment to get pregnant. I was on a lot of hormones before I was even pregnant. And I was like, oh God, even the trailer for some of like, I remember seeing one. Was it a film called Ruby?
Yeah,
I haven't actually seen it. Yeah. And it was about like a woman who gets pregnant and there's something up with the baby. And I was just like, so stressed out from watching the trailer. I was like, I don't think I can do it. Whereas now I'm like safely, you know, I'm about 16 weeks now, so we're about, you know, we're well into second trimester. I am no longer feeling like shit all the time. I'm feeling good and glowy, and I have a little bump, and yeah, now I think I'd be okay. But yeah, those first like couple of months, no, my anxiety, like the hormones, there is not a chance.
Could you imagine? So we would do like Ruby, we would do The Brood, we would do L'Intérieur, we would do the French one, which is, I think it, in English is Inside. We would need a fourth one to round things out. But
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there? But we could revisit this topic, you know, when you're like 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, let me just explain how bad it was. In the, like, when I was very newly pregnant, me and Andy went to the cinema to see Cocaine Bear, and I cried three times.
Because I cried. Of the bear.
Yeah, I was so sad for the bear.
Same. That's why I won't go see it, because I know the true story that it's based on, and I feel like it's horrific.
Well, actually, I cried to begin with. The first time I cried was because a character I really liked had his leg ripped off, and I cried. And then I cried because the bear was on, like, loads of cocaine, and I was worried for the bear. And then I cried again because, like, there's a bit with, like, when it turns out, like, she's a mama bear and she has little baby bears, little, like, baby cubs. And then I cried because I was sad and I thought the bear was dead. I thought mama bear had died. And I was, like, sobbing. Not even just, like, a little bit teary. I was full-blown in the cinema, like, sobbing. And, yeah, oh my God. I was like... Yeah.
Well, I mean, so for the movie, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but in real life, the bear dies.
Yeah.
Like a horrible, horrific death. And was probably very traumatized. The film is very different,
I think. Yeah.
But the true story is like, no, I'm not going to see that.
I will say, I mean, it's Elizabeth Banks, Cocaine Bear, directed. It is a lot of fun.
I do love her.
Yeah. She's good.
She is wondrous.
Yeah, she's very funny.
So funny. And I always think of her as the in Pitch Perfect. She was one of the like commentators.
Yep.
And it's just hysterical. And then I think she directed the second one. All the exciting news here on the 50th anniversary episode.
Yeah.
And also Jenny chose our film that we were talking about on the 50th episode. So Jenny's favorite, which you may have heard us mention multiple times in previous episodes, if you are a dedicated listener.
Which I hope you are. We are doing The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If the intro didn't give it away.
Texas Chainsaw.
The Saw.
Massacre. You the have original? To do every word separate, because you know they wouldn't allow the word chainsaw. So they had to separate the two words.
Yes. Chain and saw. There are everything about this film is mad and perfect and just would not happen if they tried to film it again today. I mean, I've seen the remakes and the kind of updated versions, and I don't hate them. I genuinely don't hate them. But yeah, you cannot beat 1974, Tobe Hooper. It's just perfect.
It is pretty much perfect. I mean, I was really thinking about this because I knew. I mean, there's not really any mystery here in terms of ratings, is there?
Oh, God, no.
I knew that you were going to rate it highly. I knew I was going to rate it highly. I was pretty sure we're both going to give it 5 stars. So I don't think there's any real reveal in that.
Oh, no.
It's truly scary. And I think, I mean, for me, that supersedes everything else. But also, I mean, really, when we get into it, I really tried to take the time this time to put aside just like the terror that you feel watching it and appreciate things like the soundscape. I was paying a little bit more attention to the sound and some of the shots that he does and how he chooses when to allow you to really feast your eyes. And he's so selective and clever about that. Tobe Hooper, I mean, as a director. So, and then obviously the performances, Jesus, the ability of Sally to sustain that level of fear is, I was exhausted just watching her.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, this is probably, if someone asked me what the best horror film of all time is, I would probably say that it's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, that doesn't mean it's my absolute favorite to watch all the time, because it can be quite intense and quite grueling. Like, I know that I tried to watch this earlier in the year, and I think I was just in quite a tense frame of mind, and we put it on. And within 5-10 minutes, I was like, we need to turn this off. I just can't do it. Whereas, for example, The Exorcist, I can watch anytime, because I find that that's slightly more entertaining, has some like kind of ups and downs a little bit, so it's not so kind of full on. But in regards to being just like a perfect horror film, like absolutely perfect, there is nothing I would change about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, and one of the things that it does so well is the, and I always talk about this with films, is the rhythm of it and how it builds to this relentless. I mean, it is relentless. Those last, I'd say, what, 35 minutes are just.
Yeah.
I mean, so I can understand why you would be like, maybe I'm not going to watch this today. Whereas The Exorcist, you have time to pause. And yes, there does come a point in that film too, where it's pretty nonstop, but at least you've got some storyline in the background. It's a Father Karras with his mom and, like, you know, all those sort of backstory. I mean, this is like one location. There's not really any of that because you don't need it.
The plot is so simple to this film. I should have pre-written a haiku. I haven't. Never mind. But the film is just, you know, five teens in a van. They're going on a bit of a road trip through Texas because two of them are brother and sister, and they're worried that their grandfather's grave has been desecrated in a recent, like, series of grave robbings. So they go and check out the grave. You know, they run out of gas. They kind of go to visit the old family farm, which is all abandoned. And they come across a family of cannibals who live in the house on their old family land. There is, like, that's all the plot. It's, like, so simple.
Mm.
So simple.
Yeah.
Apart from it, like, the most dialogue you get is when they're in the van together at the beginning, you know, talking. The rest, there's hardly any dialogue the rest of the film, really. You know, some of the main characters, like, you know, you look at Leatherface, who is obviously the main villain of the piece. He doesn't speak, not any words. He makes, like, screams and grunts and things, but he doesn't say, he doesn't have any dialogue. You know, we have a little bit from brother, the hitchhiker, and
the gas station attendant.
Yeah, I think he's, what's his name?
I never even wrote his name down. I just
They don't really have names as such.
The gas station attendant. I think maybe they mention it like one time.
He's like, they refer to him as like old man or cook.
I called mine HH for hitchhiker, LF for Leatherface, and GG for the gas guy.
Yeah, Ira Skibble, the cook. So yeah, he's also just referred to as cook or old man. So we'll refer to him as cook because that kind of. Or old man, or gas station guy.
Who's the cook?
That's what they keep referring to him. Like, remember the hitchhiker keeps saying, "Oh, he's just the cook."
Oh, I guess he was the cook because he was making barbecue.
He does the barbecue, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the plot is so simple. We don't get a lot of character development, not really. This isn't a film where, you know, because, like, we did X, obviously, a little while ago, and we even described that as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre with porn. Because so much of that film was lifted directly from this, especially the beginning.
Absolutely. And this film has been referenced a million times. I mean, Rob Zombie very openly talked about how influenced he was when he made House of a Thousand Corpses. And I believe The Devil's Rejects was very, you know, the Firefly family is basically.
Say that again.
I know. The Firefly family.
Flim, flam, flim, flam.
Thank you. I'm glad that was a subtle, you know, tripping off the tongue. So yeah, I think I even started to write in my notes just how many films I wrote. Ty West as well, obviously, from X, American Horror Story, when they did what was the one where it's like a reality show in the house.
Oh my!
But I mean, I suppose anytime you have a real fucked up hillbilly family that wants to kill everybody,
yeah,
you're gonna think, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Because also, I think about that film, The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
Which one came first? It was Texas Chainsaw, wasn't it?
Texas Chainsaw came first. Texas Chainsaw came out in 1974. The only film that kind of came before it that I feel is similar in tone, maybe. Was Wes Craven's Last House on the Left, which was 1973, which was probably more intense and more brutal, but just not as good. Like, that is not a film that I will watch. I've watched it once. I probably will never watch it again unless we do it for the podcast, because it's just horrific. But this came before Hills Have Eyes and things like that. So yeah, I think it's kind of the beginning of the whole, like, exploitation, redneck, hillbilly.
And then it's also... as a subgenre, it's usually referred to as a slasher. And obviously, like, I'm thinking about it, obviously it's a slasher, but I don't know why I don't immediately. I wouldn't use that to describe it like immediately.
See, what I love about this film is it can fall into so many categories. Like it's a slasher in that you've got a group of young teenagers being, you know, murdered and attacked by one individual, a masked man. So that's like slasher 101. And you have a final girl, although I'll talk a little bit why Sally is not your typical final girl, although some say she's one of the first, so it makes sense that she might not be like what we would expect. But also, it's a folk horror, because folk horror is all about setting and location. And, you know, when they get to the house, yes, and the old family house, and there's like the weird bone sculptures, and like, you know, they almost look like ritualistic, you know, like magical symbols, yeah, like Blair Witchy, that kind of thing. So it works in folk horror. There's a point where it feels like a home invasion film, where Leatherface is the victim, where he like freaks out because he doesn't understand where all these people are coming from. And it's like,
so I don't either. why is he just walking in the house?
I know, why is he just walking to people's house? But yeah, so like it kind of fits into all of these different categories, you know. So yeah, it is a slasher, I guess, or you could say it, you know, is a proto slasher in that it kind of influenced. Because was this before Halloween?
Like a month. It is before Halloween, because Halloween was like 78 or
yeah. And when was Black Christmas? Because to me, Black Christmas is the first slasher.
That's the one I was. That's what I was thinking of, Black Christmas, because I thought Black Christmas was the first.
Yeah, Black Christmas to me is the first, like, first slasher.
Okay, so Black Christmas is 1974.
Same year as Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that, you know, this really is, like, this and Black Christmas are pretty much, like, your proto-slasher films.
And then, yeah, your first Halloween was 78.
Yeah, which came a little bit later.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm assuming did you give it chainsaws, Leatherface?
I gave it chainsaws. Yeah, yeah.
I really would like to see. I gave mine Leatherfaces. I would like to show them to you.
I'm. Yeah. They sort of. Okay.
They kind of look like runny eggs.
They. Yeah. I mean, his mask's. Can I see if I hold that up?
Oh, yours are really good. Jenny's chainsaw drawings are very realistic.
I'm not sure I'll do that, Bob.
But we both gave it 5. And as we said at the top of the show, this is absolutely not a surprise. We're dealing with one of the legends of, you know, horror films, an absolute classic, an icon in terms of Leatherface, often referenced, tried to be duplicated, but never really successful. Yeah. I have seen only one of the, there have been sequels, prequels, reboots, you name it. I think the only one I ever saw was the one that had, it was like the new version, but the same story. 2003, maybe it was.
Yeah, okay. So that one I
was
know
it
I've
Jessica
seen.
Biel who was in it?
Oh, I God, think. Maybe.
I was her, like Jennifer Love Hewitt or some like super beautiful girl from the 90s or from the early 2000s. I think it was Jessica Biel, but I thought it was pretty scary.
Yeah, yeah, it was scary.
I didn't love it.
It was very good, but like, that's okay. No. I don't hate any of them. There are two sequels. So there was like 1, 2, and 3. I know I've seen 3. I just can't remember it. I quite like number 2 with the radio DJ. It's very 80s. It's very kind of camp. But yeah, it's set like in a carnival. The family are in like a carnival, like fun house, killing people. So it's cheesy and 80s and fun. So as a kind of 80s film, it is good. It's nothing like the original, but it's still good fun. I can't remember number 3. It's fairly unmemorable, I think. The early 2000s remake was okay. I remember being scared by it, but it didn't have the lasting effect on me that the original did. And then the recent one that they did, was it Netflix did one? I actually quite liked that. I didn't hate it. I thought it was interesting. I kind of liked what they did. I liked the fact that it was all like these like influencers that had come to this like abandoned town and were trying to take it over and gentrify it. And it was like, well, the like with any sort of like folk horror, almost like I said before, you know, the old fights back.
I have seen none of those. Maybe we'll have to visit them in a series of sequels, part 3.
Yeah, I think if we do that, we definitely should do Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, because that is a lot of fun.
I'm sorry, you just said camp 80s. I was like, yes.
Carnival, there's a radio DJ, like this badass woman, I've forgotten her name. there's a bit where like Leatherface is rubbing the chainsaw on her crotch and it goes, it like turns, he unplugs it or something, and it turns off and she makes like a like an impotent joke. And yeah, I think I use that in my dissertation. That's why it always sticks in my head. But yeah, like it's a lot of, it's fun. It's not the kind of groundbreaking, harrowing experience of the original though. It's very different.
That this one was, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, do you know the story of how Toby Hooper came up with the idea for Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
No. Well, I feel like I do, but I don't remember. Tell me.
So it was Christmas, 1973, and he had to go and do his Christmas shopping, and he didn't really want to, and he had to go to a department store, and it was heaving. And it was just so, yeah, it was like so crazy busy.
I do remember the story.
So he just yes. ducked into like this one, the like one quiet bit of the shop, which was the hardware department. And he ended up just standing looking at all these chainsaws. And, you know, he's not a crazy serial killer, but just the thought popped into his head. Oh, I know how to clear through all these people. I could pick up one of these chainsaws and I'd get through these crowds fairly quick. And I think he was probably like,
that's not interested at all.
Yeah, we've all been there. It's like when you sit close to a, you know, the edge of a cliff and it's like, oh, what would happen if I would just took a step off? It's the same sort of like impulse in your brain. So yeah, and then he was like, well, I'm obviously not going to do that, but that will be my next screenplay.
Love it. Yeah. From the Christmas madness comes this genius idea.
Yeah.
That is so clever in its simplicity. And yeah. I would like to, I think, I was very young, but I know my dad dressed up as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one year for Halloween and carried his chainsaw around while we went trick-or-treating.
What, was he Leatherface?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
he had quite one. Tall as well, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently it was quite effective. I mean, I was so young, I don't remember it. I'll have to chase this story up and try and get some photos.
Yes, but that would be great for the Instagram.
I don't know. We've said quite a lot and we're only in the intro. I mean, should we get into it?
Let's just get into it.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
So the film starts with basically what we started tonight's show with. There's a bit of narration done by John Larroquette, who claims he was paid to do the
marijuana.
Yeah, paid with a joint. Like, he's our kind of guy.
I'll cheers to that.
Yeah, paid by a joint to do his narration, which the narration makes it sound like it's some sort of like docudrama that we're about to see. So for a long time, people genuinely thought that this was a true story, that this had really happened.
Yes. And I actually forgot that it starts off like this.
Yeah.
Like it's meant to be like an almost Blair Witch-esque documentary type thing. I'd completely forgotten about that. And it's, yeah. I love that about it. And there are moments where the filming really gives that documentary style feel. I don't know how to describe it, in some of like the close-ups or like the, yeah, do you know what I mean,
the way the shots are set up, definitely. And yeah, like you can understand why people would have thought that, you know, especially in the 70s, that this was like some sort of kind of crazy docudrama. Because I mean, you probably know way more about kind of American history than I do, but the 70s, especially, you know, coming off the back of like the 60s and everything that happened at the end of the 60s in America, you know, you had the assassinations and things, and then the Vietnam War, and then like nobody trusted anybody, you know, they couldn't trust the government. And then it's like they were constantly feeling like paranoid and like all these terrible things were happening from within, and you know, all this like evil seeping out of the woodwork. So I understand why they were, especially in like 1970, mid-70s, that they would have thought that this was real, whereas it's not real. There was never any. What are the Sawyer family, isn't it? The Leatherface and the Sawyers, they weren't real. His character, or some of the things in the house, especially, are very loosely based on Ed Gein, who was a real serial killer. Although I would say serial killer because he killed like two people. It was mostly that he dug up the graves and used the body parts to make like furniture and a skin suit, things like that. So there was a lot of inspiration for Toby Hooper in like Leatherface's character and the dressings of the house. But yeah, like story-wise, it's all very different. And yeah, it's completely untrue. But yeah, so brilliant intro.
I was just going to agree with you. It just really sets it all up, because you also, because again, I'd sort of forgotten. So really quickly, how many times would you say roughly that you've seen this film?
Oh, 10 maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say anywhere between, for me, like 10 and 20. I've seen it a lot. There was a period in time when I had, so we're going back to DVD days. So it's like 2003 maybe. And I had it on DVD and I used to put it on and fall asleep, and I would wake up and it would have gone back to the menu. Ooh. And the menu, and the menu had the sound of Sally screaming as like a loop. So I'd wake up to like screaming and be like, oh yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I've seen it a lot. And so but I haven't seen it in a while. It's one of those films, like we were kind of talking about it in the intro, like even Exorcist, I can watch it, but I sort of choose not to, because I think I'm worried that if I see it too many times, it won't scare me anymore. Like, something about that scariness will wear off. It will be too familiar. So it's like a treat. I limit myself. So I haven't seen Texas Chainsaw in, I would say, probably at least 4 years, maybe five.
Yeah, like I said, I tried to watch earlier in the year, couldn't. I have a feeling that me and Andy watched them during lockdown, because I think we went through a phase of like watching all film series. So I think that's, I mean, we definitely watched two and probably three. So I think we probably watched one, then two, then three. But again, you're talking like a few years. And yeah, it's amazing how I know this film so well, but I'm yet surprised by new things like every single time.
Yes, so agree.
This time round, I was just like the whole soundscape, the entire sound in this film is designed to unsettle you and make you feel like a bit sick and queasy and uneasy and tense from the very beginning. Like, there is no music in this film apart from a couple of like little copyrighted, you know, actual songs that they play like in the radio or whatever. There's no actual music. All the sound was done from like slaughterhouse noises, like banging things together, and like that noise that you get at the very beginning of like the camera flashing.
Oh, the pop of the
Which, if you were a Slipknot fan in Iowa era, is basically the entirety of that album has the exact same feel as this film. They use a lot of the sounds from this film in like the interludes and things. So yeah, like it instantly took me back to like 2000 2001, being a little like metalhead listening to Iowa, and the same kind of feeling I would get, you know, that kind of like your skin feels like grimy and dirty and like sticky just from listening to a sound, which is an incredible experience. But yeah, everything about the sound in this film, especially this time, just incredible.
Yeah. Yes, agree. And that's something that I noticed as well. And even so the opening scene is basically the sound of the camera going, and it's a black screen, and then the sound goes and the light pops, and you see what appears to be quite close up shots of decomposing corpses. Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like a journalist or, you know, a photographer for a publication or something, because it's being reported on.
Yeah, like a police, like, you know, a crime scene where they take pictures of a crime scene. It's like that. And yeah, you have this like radio coming over the top talking about all these like horrific things. It starts off with like, you know, all these horrible like violent acts around the country, like all these horrible things, and then it hones into like this grave robbing, this surge of grave robbings that's been happening in this rural part of Texas. Where they found all these different graves. And then they talk about how this like weird kind of sculpture, like some of the bodies were put together and left in the graveyard. And you kind of, the camera flashes again, like you were saying, with like these like, and like close-ups, and it's of this melted decomposing face. And the camera really slowly pans out, and it's this graveyard. This was filmed in the midsummer in Texas. It was like crazy hot. And yeah, you can just tell it's like the sky is almost like a sepia color, and you have just this weird melting mishmash.
It was like a scarecrow corpse.
Yeah.
And the shots that he did of the corpse were very long and lingering. And then, like you said, it sort of pans out wider and wider, and you can see the rest of the tableau, because it is kind of like a tableau.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the word. That's the word I was trying to think of.
I love a good tableau.
Yeah.
We love to use them in the theater for sure. So you've got this scarecrow corpse like holding a skull. It looks like it's really almost hard to make out what the body parts are, which you know, is just overall brilliant. And so, yeah, as Jenny said, you've got the broadcast going over the top of it, and then the credits roll. And so you have all of your credits at the top of the film, which is a yellow text over this kind of black, red, overexposed image. And even the credits, there was, with the sounds, there's just something so foreboding and eerie about that. Like, you just, you're thinking, all right, buckle the fuck up, because here we go.
Yeah. I said it like earlier in the year, I tried to watch it and turned it off. I don't think I got much past this. I think because we watched it on DVD, because we own the DVD. And yeah, like you said, like the DVD menu has all those like weird noises and the flash noises. And I think just all of that like got me stressed out before we even put the film on. So the whole thing.
Like,
they
start as they mean to go on.
Absolutely. And then we get like a really weird, we go to another death. It's like a dead armadillo, just upside down, rusting in the road. Mm-hmm. Poor armadillo.
They're I've like, never... can we get some more death in here? Can we fit?
Yeah.
I know.
Roadkill. Yeah.
And then what I really like that he did here, and not to say, well, people probably got it from this, but the radio that's going over the top of it then sort of segues into the inside of the van. So it's this really seamless transition, right? It's a cut from the sounds and the kind of radio in the backgrounds and the credits, and then boom, we're in the inside of this van with these kids.
Yeah.
Kids, I mean, I would guess that they're probably like 19, 20.
Yeah, although I saw something that said Sally was supposed to be like 17. I was like, really? That seems a bit young. I would have, like you said, I would have put them at like, you know, 19.
And I mean, the difference really in those couple of years is just that they look too mature for high school, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So, and 17 to me is like, in America anyways, is still high school.
Yeah, that's
so I feel like they've graduated at least, maybe it's the summer before college. But also, I do think sometimes people tended to look maybe a little slightly older back in the day than what they were. I still think so. They're all beautiful. Don't get me wrong. They're all 70s beautiful. There's lots of feathered hair and like long, straight, ironed hair and bell bottoms for the gods. So
yeah, the style in this film is fairly banging.
Yeah. So yeah, the radio broadcast connects the scene, and I just really loved that. So then here we are in the van, and you're kind of introduced to them. And
yeah, well, it starts off like at the beginning, like the van pulls over. So straight away,
Because Franklin. Yeah.
Yeah. So like one of the guys, I think it's because it's so the people in the van, we've got Sally and her brother Franklin. Franklin is in a wheelchair. And then you have, is it Jerry?
There's Jerry, Kirk, and Pam.
Yeah, so Jerry is Sally's boyfriend, and then Kirk and Pam are also a couple. So Jerry gets out and pulls these like planks of wood out, and like Franklin wheels out. And
oh, to be disabled in the 70s.
Yeah.
No, now, thank you.
One thing, the main difference I found between watching this film this time and watching it all the others previously, I normally hate Franklin. I normally find him whiny and annoying, and he just gets on my nerves. And like the whole story with him was that he stayed in character the entire time. I think it was about 36 days the filming schedule was. And because they didn't have a lot of money, they didn't have a lot of time, and he found it really hard to kind of slip in and out of character. So he stayed in character the whole time. So everybody hated him because they found him whiny and annoying. But having watched this film now, I don't know if it's the pregnancy or if it's the fact that my own mobility isn't great anymore, but I just felt so sorry for him. They were so horrible to him. The guy's in a wheelchair, and he had like shit happened to him from the very beginning. So this is the first scene that we see him in, and he's wheeled to the side of the road to go for a wee. And they're like in the truck, and this huge gas, like petrol lorry drives past and beeps, scares the living shit out of him, and he like rolls off down the hill and falls out of his wheelchair and gets really badly
out of his wheelchair.
Yeah, and like tumbles down this hill.
I was like horrified, and then they go running after him, but they're pretty like cash about it.
Yeah,
you know? Franklin's out of his wheelchair.
Yeah,
that's really interesting that he stayed in character, and it's also interesting to me about what you just said, because you're right, and I felt less annoyed. I mean, look, Franklin as a character is meant to be annoying to an extent, mm-hmm. but yes, I do think we are meant to feel more bad for him than like what I did previously. I used to hate him as well, and this time, I didn't hate him. He's still annoying, but I didn't hate him. But really, I felt for Sally because I was thinking, I think I even wrote a note. I'm like, not only does she probably have to do the emotional labor for Franklin because he emotionally blackmails her a couple of times, she also does the physical labor for him. So she pushes him around. She's probably been taking care of him her whole life.
Yeah.
So I also felt bad for her in a way.
See, not that's how I normally feel, but this time I was like, no, they all treat him like shit. He's in a wheelchair and they act like he's like this big burden. But then you hear him later on when he's like mimicking them to himself because they fucking left him and gone upstairs and just left him outside an abandoned house in the middle of nowhere in the sun in a wheelchair where he can't get
in.
They're all giggling and laughing. And it's like he's like, oh, Franklin, you should come along. It's gonna be so much fun. And it's like they kind of obviously like goaded him and begged him to come along with them. And then they just fucking ditch him all the time, you know, laugh at him. And I'm like, no. And then when he later on, when like I said, when he's like talking to Sally and trying to do the right thing and leave because he's rightly scared because he's way more vulnerable than the rest of them.
100%. Yeah.
And, you know, if they'd fucking listened to Franklin, it would have been way, you know. At least some of them would still be alive. Maybe not all of them, but yeah. Like if they, you know, I don't know. I go in
and out with Franklin. I think I felt more empathy for him this time than I have ever. That is true. And I don't know if that's my getting older. Like you said, like it could be your mobility issues, like your hormones. For me too, hormones, you know, in a different way. I'm like anti-pregnant, so it's a different thing.
You are the direct opposite of pregnant.
I'm literally the opposite of pregnant. I was thinking, is there an opposite of pregnant? Yes, there is. There is. Yeah. I am that. But yeah, so agree. I felt more for him than I usually do. But of course, also like there's a lot of self-pity going on. There's a lot we could dig into with his character and their dynamic for sure. But I mean, I was also feeling for him as like the only uncoupled person there. You're there with two couples. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like they didn't treat him very well, and from the get go. So like, he is annoying, especially in the van. He's like kind of weird and kind of annoying, but I don't know. I was just like, maybe if he's always being treated like a bit of a burden. So I imagine, you know, like you said, being disabled in the '70s was probably no fucking ride. I mean, it's not much fun now, let alone all you know those years ago. I can imagine he's always been kind of treated like a burden. And that has a lasting effect on you. So yeah, poor Franklin falls down the hill. Jerry like runs after him and they obviously get him back in. They're in the back of their like Scooby-Doo van.
It is a
Scooby-Doo van. And we have Pam is talking about astrology. Oh, Pam. Basically, she's reading about how like Saturn is an evil influence. And because Saturn is in retrograde, that means that Saturn is like doubly evil. First of all, Saturn is not an evil planet. Saturn, you know, has a lot to do with kind of, well, a variety of things, but it's not evil.
No, and neither is Mercury while we're talking about it.
No. Mercury, you just need to make a few adjustments during Mercury retrograde. I was doing a recording for my other podcast during the last Mercury retrograde, got to the end of it and realized it hadn't recorded. That is what you have to be careful of on Mercury retrograde.
Mm-hmm. Technology, electronic
communication. Yeah, you just have to be more careful.
She gives Franklin a quite awful yet accurate, we find out later, horoscope reading.
Yes, I can't remember quite what she says. So I know she's into Sally's later on.
Well, I didn't pay. Yeah. I don't know what it was with Pam. I didn't pay that much attention.
Like I said, you like don't really get to know the characters
Pam.
That much. The only thing we learn about Pam is that she is wearing an awesome, like, crocheted backless halter neck and reads books on horror.
Super cute shorts.
Yeah, yeah, like horoscope books. But yeah, so they kind of pull in to this graveyard, and it's the graveyard that we've been hearing about on the radio story. And this is where, like, Sally is talking. Basically, Sally and Franklin's grandfather... and father, like they're from the area, and their grandfather is buried at this graveyard. And they've come all the way out here because they want to check that one of the many graves that have been desecrated wasn't their grandfather's. So they kind of pop in to this graveyard and meet some really weird locals. including one guy who's like just rolling around cackling in the ground. I don't really understand, like
drinking beer. He was like absolutely wasted. I didn't really understand the point of this either, except it was a setup, right? It's a plot device. It's basically like, we need to get them out to the house. This is the reason that they're going. And I don't mind it, because everything that happens to them just builds on that feeling of uneasiness, and I don't like, it's disturbing. Everything's just that little bit off.
Yeah,
like the police that were there were just that little bit off in their behavior. The drunk guy on the grass was obviously, you know, mentally unwell, and so that was disturbing. And then the whole thing is that they're trying to check if their grandfather's grave was desecrated, and that mission in and of itself is also disturbing. So
yeah,
you've got all of these things going on. So just, you know, but yeah, that's all that's happening. Basically, they're looking for their grandfather's grave. They ascertain that it is not desecrated.
Yeah, it's all fine.
And then they decide that they are in the area, and so they want to go visit like a house that the family.
So yeah, the grandfather. There's like the family homestead, basically, where their father was born. They used to visit in summers. Their grandparents used to live out there, and as they're driving along, they pass the slaughterhouse, and Franklin's like, oh, that's the slaughterhouse, that's where like my granddaddy used to work. And then he starts talking, and this is like one of the things that I think does not endear Franklin to people. He starts talking about how the cows were killed, and he was like talking about how like he went and how their uncle still works in a slaughterhouse, and how he goes and like they used to just bash the cows on the head. But then they don't do that anymore, because sometimes it would take like two or three hits and they're seizuring all over the place. And now it's done with like a bolt gun. And yeah, so, and he, like, Pam's a vegetarian and things, so that, or she makes out that she is, or like eating meat's wrong, that kind of thing. So he kind of pisses everybody off a little bit by doing that. And then they do something that must be so 70s. They pick up a hitchhiker.
Yes, yes. Like, it's very... I mean, it's great. It's, on the one hand, it makes me sad that we're so distrustful of each other, and now you would never do that. Movies like this don't help. But yes, back in the day, especially like the 60s and 70s, maybe up until Eileen Wuornos, people would pick up hitchhikers all the time. It was very common. I know, like, I think my dad has said he hitchhiked, maybe even my mom too. Like, it was just so common. People would hitchhike all over the place.
But then, like, you look at this guy, and the guy they pick up is clearly not right.
Why would you pick him up? He's got, like, a birthmark or something on his face. It almost looks like he's got blood smeared on it.
Yeah, and he's got, like, really greasy long hair. He just obviously, like, you can tell by the expression on his face, he's not right.
I actually wrote in my notes, he's super normal.
His gene pool is more of a puddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
his parents were probably brother and sister.
There's not a lot of variety in the gene pool.
No, exactly.
It's more
of a swamp. So yeah, like, they pick up this creepy hitchhiker, and he's talking about how he'd come from the slaughterhouse.
Oh, and can I just throw in what he's wearing? He's wearing a pouch, if you will, around his neck, which looks like it's been made of roadkill. Mm-hmm. But yet he also has a camera. And it's like an instant camera.
Yeah.
Like a predecessor maybe to like Polaroids.
Yeah, it's like an Instax. Mm. Like, yeah, very, very old school, but very cool.
And you have sort of this whole exchange, which I'll let Jenny tell it because I think she'll tell it better. But this whole exchange takes place. It's all the interior of the van. So you've got Jerry driving and Sally in the front, Pam and Kirk and Franklin in the wheelchair in the back, and this hitchhiker in the back as well. Some of these shots make the van look absolutely enormous, but I think it's just the way that they're shot.
Yeah, because you basically have all of them on one side.
All this space.
Like, they're all like sat as far back as they can towards the front, and then like the hitchhiker's facing them towards the back. Like, they're very much like, oh, yeah, we've made a mistake here. We should not have picked this guy up. He's like super weird. And the girls straight away were like not happy about it. But the guy's, oh, yeah, it's fine. Let's just pick up this guy. So, yeah, he starts talking about how he's come from the slaughterhouse. And Franklin's like, oh, yeah, my granddaddy used to work there. Like, my uncle works in a slaughterhouse. Do they have those bolt guns? And the hitchhiker's like, oh, yeah, but, you know, like, my brother works that used to work there. My grandpa, like, granddad used to work there as well. But, you know, the new way is not very good. The old way of killing is so much better. And it's like, oh, really? And then Franklin has this fucking knife.
Franklin and this fucking knife. I swear to God.
I mean, to be fair, he just has this little pocket knife that he's like play, that he plays with, and the hitchhiker guy like takes it from him, and then giggling, and then just like carves his own hand open whilst laughing, which instantly freaks everybody out. And like Franklin gets his knife back, and he's just okay, like what the fuck? It's covered in like this guy's blood. And then the guy hitchhiker's like, oh, I've got a knife too, and pulls out like a switchblade razor thing from his sock. And at this point, they're all just like, oh fuck, we're all gonna die.
Yeah, it's time for you to maybe get out of the car. Yeah, but maybe... first, he takes their picture.
He does take a picture, and he also starts talking about how his brother makes the best head cheese. He's like, you know.
Oh yeah.
He's like, he talk about how what's in head cheese, and because Franklin's like, yeah, I like head cheese, and he's like, yeah, it's all the bits, and we like boil it, and my brother makes the best head cheese. It's like, oh, you should come for dinner. It's like, what an invitation. Let's go check out this brother's head cheese.
I would decline. I would decline this invitation, least of all because of the head cheese.
Yeah, I love the fact they're like, "Oh, we have somewhere else to be." They're just like,
"They're like, we're in a hurry. We have to drop you off here."
Yeah,
like, dude, you don't have to give any excuse. Pull over to the side of the road, open the door, and kick that fucker out.
But get they, him out they of don't. There. Not yet. Not until he's taken their picture. They refuse to give him like $2 for the photo. So then he sets fire to the picture.
I think everyone in the picture is probably like,
ugh. And he's like, it's a good picture. You pay me now. And then it's like, yeah, no, we're not paying you for that. And then he just puts it on top of like his little pouch and sprinkles some stuff on it, sets it on fire so that they're all screaming and shouting. Then he like grabs Franklin's arm and cuts his arm open with his razor blade. And that's when finally they kick him out. Paul Franklin has so far on this day fallen down a hill and had his arm cut open and been told like a horrible horoscope about himself for the day. He's not having a good day.
It's not a good day for Franklin. No, no. At all. And I did write, Franklin is a giant crybaby, which he is, but I do still feel for him. And this
some
is
crazy
Pam
guy grabbed his arm and cut him open.
I know. Well, I know, but he's like crying and whining, and he's 20.
Is he though? We don't know how old he is.
Well, is he 12? No. Or 8? I mean, I don't know. I'm not, I listen, feel your feelings. I cry if you want. It's not a gendered thing. I just feel like he's just like, and there's like no real tears.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
But yeah, you're right. I don't love Franklin. I just feel like that maybe he's been misaligned. And I kind of feel for him more than I ever have previously. But yeah, so then this is what now when like Pam's getting back to her horoscopes. And I think like Jerry's like, oh, what's Sally's horoscope? She's a Capricorn. And she's like, oh no, Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. There are moments today when you can't believe what's happening is real. You might have to pinch yourself. It's like, oh.
Another very apt horoscope. So does that mean Toby Hooper's like big into astrology, I wonder?
Yeah, or I think it's probably more likely that he just wanted to give like add yet another thing to the sense of foreboding, as if the sound, the grave sculpture, corpse puppets, the crazy hitchhiker, and you know, wasn't enough. But now we also need like Saturn fucking with everything.
Oh, and not only that, but now we're almost out of gas, so it's time to stop at the gas station.
Yep.
Oh. Quick fire round.
Okay.
Got a question for you. Quick interlude.
Yeah.
What are your top three favorite horror movie gas station scenes?
Ooh.
There's so many, right? There's like one in every
Halloween.
Movie.
Is it Halloween?
2018.
Yeah. Oh, fuck that. A bit in the gas station with the podcasters.
That is a great scene. Oh. That's actually the first one on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%
agree.
That is like so fucked up. I like, obviously, you have Captain Spaulding at, in House of Thousand Corpses and his like weird sideshow gas station.
Yeah, that was great. That also sells fried chicken.
Yeah.
Yep. That's another one that makes the list for sure.
Ooh, what else?
I was also thinking about,
Go on.
Which one?
I was going to say maybe I think there's one in Friday the 13th part 3. It's pretty good. But I can't remember if that's just like a little convenience type store as opposed to a gas station, because sometimes you get them like in a store in the shop part of the gas station, so it's hard to tell if it's like a gas station or just a convenience store.
Yeah, I was thinking like Wrong Turn. There's a good gas station scene in Wrong Turn. Mm-hmm. But anytime you're like out in the wilderness with Hicks, that you A, you always have to stop at the gas station, and B, you can almost guarantee every time that it's going to be full of like people who are connected somehow to your killers later on.
Yep.
They just are.
Yep. It's because it's the only business in the area. It's how they keep, you know, how they get their money to keep on killing.
And they bring in the victims. Oh, I know another good one is House of Wax. But the new one with Paris Hilton.
Oh, fuck. I know I've seen it. I don't really remember.
Oh, my gosh, Jenny. We should totally do House of Wax. Because it's, like, good and scary, right? The original one's, like, Vincent Price, I think. Mm-hmm. But the remake is... It's got Paris Hilton in it. It's just a good time. Yep. And I think, who's that guy? Chad Michael Murray, maybe?
Chad Michael Murray, yes. I used to love him. From One Tree Hill. Was he in the Cinderella story?
I think so. He's like very cute. I think he has a brother who also acts or something. I don't know. Anyway, gas station time.
So yeah, they are at the gas station, and I think the girls have like gone in to pee or something. And I love this because you get a shot of them like walking away, and it's kind of low, and you just kind of see like their outfits. But nothing in this film is like pervy or sleazy. There are no sexual looks.
I agree.
There is no sex in this film whatsoever. There's no kind of nudity. There's nothing. Like, it's really fucking hot, and they're wearing kind of summer clothes, and it's the 70s, so that's all very like crocheted crop tops and things. But there's nothing sexual about it. But I love this because we see very similar shots of the girls at the gas station in X, but that is very sexualized because obviously yes. They're like porn stars. So yeah, I loved like seeing it now and being like they basically like Ty West took this shot pretty much straight from Texas Chainsaw Massacre and then just like dialed the sex up.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so the girls go in and there's like someone's like washing the windscreen, and there's like, an old guy, and I think it's either Jerry or Kirk, I can't remember which, is like, oh, have you got any gas? And the guy's like, no gas. Again, you might know something more about this, but apparently it was around the time of like some sort of like oil embargo, so the places used to run out of gas all the time. Like,
I'm very flattered that you think that I would know something about
well,
that.
Well, I don't know. Like, I just know it because of the history of this film.
The great gas scarcity of 1973.
Exactly. I don't know. But yeah, so there was a shortage of gas apparently at this time anyway. And I do like the fact that we actually see the gas trucks twice in this film. At the very beginning, it scares Franklin down the hill. And then at the very, very end, it's a gas truck when Sally runs out onto the road.
So it's a lie. He's lying.
No. But he's, because he says like, oh, he'll be back like later on today, or like he'll be here in a few hours, or maybe like later on today. Sally's like, oh, we want to go to the old Franklin place. Can you give us directions? And Franklin's like, yeah, like we want to go to like this old house. We know. And this confused me because when they let the hitchhiker out, the hitchhiker's like, oh, I live down this road. Can you not take me down? You can come for dinner. And they're all like, no, we can't go down the road. We've got somewhere to be. And so Franklin sees the hitchhiker, and Franklin's terrified of the hitchhiker now. Yeah, Franklin like knows where the hitchhiker lives because he told him. And then Franklin says to the gas guy, like, oh, I need to like my grandfather's place. I think it's back down that road, but I'm not sure. And the gas guy's very much like, oh, no, you don't want to go down there. What? You don't want to go poking around old abandoned houses. And Franklin's like, oh, no. Or Sally's like, oh, no, it was our grandfather's place. Our father now owns it. And he's like, oh, it's your daddy's place. And then the girls come out and the gas guy's like, oh, no. You don't, like, those girls don't want to be poking around. Like, he's actively trying to dissuade them from going to the house, which I think is quite interesting when you kind of see him later on. Like, I just think it's quite interesting that he doesn't want them to go to the house. He doesn't want them poking around there. He tells them to stay at the gas station. He does like a great barbecue, come inside, get some food, just hang out and wait here. I'll have some gas soon and then you can be on your way. But they don't listen.
No, they don't listen. And so, question, when the hitchhiker was kicked off of the out of the van, he wipes his blood on the side of the van.
Yeah.
And they're looking at it later and they kind of refer to it as a symbol. So do you think that like the hitchhiker, because I feel like I'm reaching here a little bit, but the hitchhiker like marked the van in some way so that the gas station attendant would see it and like know, I don't know, to send them to the house or not send them to the house.
No, I mean, I think like Franklin gets really paranoid that he's like, yeah, like, so like he's marked some sort of symbol on the van or, you know, and there's quite a lot of things about the hitchhiker guy that are, that kind of lean very into the folk horror thing. So, you know, like he's got that pouch around his neck, like made from like skin or something. And like, he seems to have weird powder, like flammable powder, because he puts it on the photo. And yeah, like he like cuts his hand and he seems to do like all these weird kind of ritualistic things, the hitchhiker, which and then later on you find out like more and more of like his kind of like weird things that he does. So I feel like he's very much like the folk horror-y kind of character in a way. So that's what I think, like the blood marking on the side of the van kind of lends to that. I don't think it was supposed to let the gas guy know, because the gas guy is pissed later on that the brother, that the hitchhiker wasn't at the house, that he went off. He shouts at him, and he definitely doesn't want these kids going down to the old Franklin place. Like, he's actively trying to dissuade them from going. He's like, don't go, stay here. The girls don't want to go poking around an old abandoned house. Stay here, eat some food, and then you can be on your way. Like, he doesn't want any trouble. He wants them gone.
Yeah. So, also, yeah, question two.
Yeah.
Is the barbecue humans?
Potentially.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, potentially it is. Yeah, so they don't listen. And they basically drive back down to the old family home, which I'm guessing, like, despite the fact that Sally says they used to go there when they were like kids, when they were like, you know, probably 8, 9. So it can't be like more than at most like 10 years since this place has been left. It is really fucking abandoned. The house they're in, you know, there's no doors. It's all overgrown.
Yeah, because
there's no windows.
Because she walks into one room and she's like, this was my room when I was a kid or something like that. Yeah. And it looks like
it's been abandoned for like 40, 50 years.
Yeah, it's like really overgrown, pretty much totally empty, doesn't look safe. But yeah, they all go upstairs and they leave Franklin downstairs. And this is sort of what Jenny was referencing earlier in the episode, that it's quite thoughtless. I can understand you want to explore. Maybe you go up for a couple minutes and you come back down, but they're up there with this obnoxious laughter. Like, what are they even laughing at? They're nothing.
All giggling.
That funny. Nothing.
And the thing is, they haven't even helped Franklin get into the house. And because it's so overgrown,
they just left him out front.
Yeah, and he's like struggling to get in, and he even calls like for Sally, and they don't come for him. And so this is when he's like, me, 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 come on, you know, come along, Franklin. It's going to be a great time. Obviously, like mimicking them, making him come along on this trip. And yeah, they just leave him, and he's like stuck on his own in this creepy abandoned house downstairs, just listening to them all upstairs having a good time without him. Yeah.
And he does this sort of monologue, quote unquote, where there's a lot of blowing of raspberries.
Yeah.
I find it strange and off-putting, and you know, I don't know if it's a script or an actor choice, but the whole thing's very off-putting. And this is where I feel like he's a little bit of like an immature baby.
Yeah.
Not to say that you wouldn't feel frustrated, not to say that you wouldn't. It's just the way that he chooses to express it is a strange choice, in my opinion. But I think you're not supposed to really like Franklin very much. I think you're meant to feel sorry for him a bit, but
yeah, I'm not even sure if you're meant to feel sorry for him. I think you're supposed to find him annoying and you know, whiny and irritating. But I don't know. It just makes me feel sad for him more than anything in this film.
Well, and this scene, I agree with you. Like, I was like, what the fuck? Are you guys just going to leave him out there? And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that part, because it was just very shitty. And then they were obnoxious with the laughing. And anyway, Pam and Kirk decide to leave and go and find the creek. Because I think if there was going to be any sex in this film, it would be them. By the creek.
Yeah. And like, they're the ones that, they're like, oh, wasn't there like an old swimming hole? And Franklin's like, yeah, you just go down the, like, in between the two sheds, there used to be a path that would take you down there. But I love this. I'm not sure if it's like Jerry or Kirk, when they're all upstairs, walks into this one room. And just to like add the kind of uneasiness that you've got that this place isn't right and they shouldn't be there, despite everything else that happened, there's like this extreme close up of like this spider's nest with all these like hundreds of spiders like crawling out of it, which is just, makes you, like, everything about this film makes you feel like sweaty and grimy and dirty and like you need a shower. This was totally gross. So yeah, Kirk and Pam go off to find the swimming hole, and this is after they've gone. This is when like Franklin finds, he's like rolling around downstairs, and he goes to the door, and there's like this pile of feathers that have been placed, and above it there's like this weird bone like wind chime thing hanging up there, which again is like very, very like folk horror-y, Blair Witchy. And Franklin by this point is genuinely like unnerved. He starts shouting for Sally, who doesn't come, obviously. She's too busy giggling upstairs with her boyfriend. And yeah, so Kirk and Pam have gone off, and they're like, as they're walking, it's down this hill, and they're like, how did Franklin even get down here? And the one's like, oh, well, when he was younger, someone must have carried him when he was smaller. And like, Kirk's like, Franklin's never been small. Such a dick.
Yeah, more meanness. More meanness to Franklin. And then Kirk, I mean, who is he anyway? His whole character arc is like, oh, there's a generator. I have a huge boner for it. Let me go. He's like following the sound of the generator.
He sees,
you know,
like the house, another house in the distance.
I mean, he's so immediately distracted from it. Like, these are your options: go to the creek with your cute girlfriend and, you know, have some fun, or follow the sounds of the generator.
Well, the creek's dried up. They walk down to it and it's all dried, like there is no more watering hole.
I thought they were just like hiking. I didn't think
no, that's like the watering hole and it's all dried up. But yeah,
okay.
And he's like, oh, they'll have some gas. I can like leave them my guitar or something and come back with some money for them. Maybe I can buy some gas from them. Yeah. And he just like wants to go and buy it. And Pam's like, oh, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should go back. And they go up to the house and like there's weird things. And, you know, it's like a farm. And
oh, there's tin cans covered in blood hanging from like bushes. There's fences. Then they look underneath the one fence and see a bunch of abandoned cars. I mean, literally every sign, every single thing.
Yeah, like red flag city here.
Red. Yeah, exactly. Do not go. It's like it's a tent of red flags.
Yeah.
Don't go in there. But what do? They go in there.
Yeah, well.
They decide to go knock on the door.
Yeah, they go and knock on the door. And then Kirk finds what looks like a human tooth lying on the floor and gives it to Pam. And she freaks out and she like walks off and just goes and sits on a swing or something. And Kirk is so rude and just goes into the house. He opens the door. And as he opens the door, like, the hallway, at the end of it, there's like this red wall. There's like another doorway and a red wall full of like animal heads. And he hears these like pig squealing noises. And he just starts walking towards the door. And this is one of my favorite scenes in any horror film, because nothing signifies like a change in pace more than this scene.
Yeah. Well, and also it's so abrupt.
Yeah.
Like, I at this point, I was filled with dread, partially because I knew what was coming and partially because I couldn't quite remember. I'm like, I know it's coming. And also Kirk just being such a fucking idiot. Like you said, he's so rude. I mean, and entitled. The door kind of on its hinges a little bit. And he takes that to mean, let me just come right in and start, I don't know, looking around your house. I mean, he was kind of still calling out, but oh my gosh, the more he called out and the further in he went, like the dread in me just grew and grew. And then boom, there's Leatherface. Smashes Kirk in the head with a fucking
hammer. Yep.
A hammer. Yeah.
And he drops to the floor and he's seizuring on
the
floor.
The convulsing was like
And Leatherface, you know, just comes in again with two more hits. And then drags him behind the door and just slams this metal door shut.
That metal door slamming shut is like, there is just something about that metal door. It is so, I recall it so vividly. It's like almost what I think of when I think of this film.
Yeah.
That slamming metal
door. Those like, yeah, there's like a few different parts of this film that I will always remember. And that is probably one of them. And whenever you're talking about horror film and like really significant scenes, for scenes so short, you could literally cut like 3 seconds of that and you would still get the same gut feeling of fuck. Like,
yes.
From that.
And with Leatherface, it's so fleeting, the view of him. It's like the Jaws effect, right? Like, even though this came first, but it's that idea that you see the monster for like 1 second and then he's gone again.
Yeah.
You don't get like a really good look yet. So of course you're just like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
I just couldn't imagine sitting in the movie theater. I was talking to my friend Dave about it. And he was like, I saw that in the movie theater. And I was so jealous. I was immediately so jealous. Like what that must have been like to see it for the first time when it came out in 1974 in the movie theater.
Yeah. Like
amazing.
It's just Insane. And yeah, and I think it's also the fact that when they slam that door shut, like the house, I mean, we haven't seen any more of the house yet. It's a little bit run down, but it looks perfectly, you know, normal for like an old farm, wooden farmhouse. But that door is metal and shiny and shouldn't be there. It's like a slaughterhouse door. So
right,
instantly you're yes. like, okay, what the fuck?
That's yeah. so true. It doesn't belong.
No.
And that's more, and that's also obviously off-putting and disturbing.
Yeah.
This thing that doesn't go there. But yeah, so you're immediately scared, but you yeah. know, on edge and intrigued. Like, what in the fuck? So then you've got, of course, poor Pam sitting outside, doesn't know what's going on. Here's like a door slam. All of a sudden, Kirk's not there. So she's like, now it's her turn to be an idiot. So I'm just like, Pam, don't do it. Don't do it. But of yeah. course she does it. She goes in to explore and she sort of trips and like falls into this room, and it's filled with feathers all over the floor and furniture made out of bones and string and
skin.
And you realize that it's human bone. There's animal bones.
Yeah,
too,
it's a
but
mixture.
Then the camera kind of zooms in on like, it's clearly a human hand.
Yeah.
And the music here is so good. And I wrote here that it's one of the only times where the music is almost intrusive. And that's, you know, obviously a choice.
Yeah.
It's
done
intentionally.
It's not even music. It's not music.
Yeah.
Though.
It's well, noise. It's not a song, but it is like, it is.
It
sound,
sounded
right?
to me like hundreds of rattlesnakes.
Because
it's like a almost like a white building, white noise, but it's like, but it sounds more organic than that. It sounds like, it sounded to me like that noise that rattlesnakes make, but if you've got like 100 of them in a room.
It is a very organic sound. Like clearly, however, it's not an electronic sound. You know,
no.
It's very. They're going with the feel here of the space and the way that it's decorated. And apparently, the guy who dressed the set. This is just a little like, I'm sure you probably even know the story better than I do. But do you know that he all of that was real?
Yep.
They went to like local slaughterhouses and got, you know, blood. The whole place was like covered in blood. Bones, feathers, all real. Could you imagine that would just never happen now?
No.
And among many, we'll say that many times in this episode.
Yeah. He actually bought like a human skeleton from India because it was cheaper than getting a realistic fake one.
Wow. And apparently because of the heat, because Jenny mentioned earlier, it's the height of summer and they filmed it in Texas, right?
Yeah, it's filmed in Texas. One of the like reports I read said that it was something, I don't know what, like, this is in centigrade, but you still work in Fahrenheit, like 124 Fahrenheit.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, they, you know, the South in the height of summer, like that's,
yeah,
it's horrible. So you can just imagine the smell of,
well,
that
even
room,
the smell,
that
not even the
real.
Room. They only had like one costume each.
Oh yeah, I read that as well.
So gosh, like Leatherface's costume, I mean, he had three different masks because each one looked slightly different, but like apparently his costume like used to smell because it was, you know, he was a big like 6'4" 22 stone guy in this crazy like butcher's overall thing in all that heat, wearing it
Mm-mm.
for like I think
I mean,
16 to ugh. 20 hour day filming schedule because they only had like a month to shoot the whole film. Wearing that in that heat without it being clean, can you imagine the smell?
I mean, all of the people, and then you've got to think, not just the actors, but the crew and the sound guy and the director. I mean, just everybody crowded into these really smelly, no.
Nope.
Sweating. And you can feel it. I mean, it's just watching it on screen, right? I mean, you can feel the heat almost. Like
yeah.
they're sweating and it's palpable. So anyway, Pam is on the floor and she's looking around. And what I did like about this part is that they really take their time with the camera here and the sound and the buildup. And then Pam starts freaking out and being sick. She's like, gonna puke. I actually think she's an idiot. I mean, I would be deadly silent and backing slowly out of the room.
Yeah.
Out the front door and running as fast as I could.
She does but go for the front door.
Well, she's kind of calling out for Kirk and like freaking out, and Leatherface yeah. chases her basically.
Yeah. Amazing her, scene. Amazing scene.
It's quite a famous scene where he's
yeah.
pulling her back through the door and she's just like limbs flying, fighting him. But yeah, he manages to pull her back through the door. It's absolutely petrifying. And puts her on a hook, like a butcher yep. hook, like right through her
Everything
spine.
About this scene I love because, yeah, like he grabs her, pulls her through, and he's just walking like she's like, you know, an animal. We know the fact that we've seen her outfit. She's got like, no bra. She's got this little harness on. And yeah, there's like Kirk's body is just on this table. And behind it are like two meat hooks hanging up with like metal troughs underneath. And he just picks her up and puts her on the meat hook. And this seems like really famous for the fact that this film, Toby Hooper filmed it. He wants it to be a PG. There is very little blood in this film. Very little blood. There's very little gore. At the very end, where there's a bit where Leatherface drops the chainsaw on his leg. And for a second, you see it cutting into his leg. That is the only point where we actually see any like gore in this film. There's no blood splatters.
You do see blood when they have the axe and they get Sally like somewhere.
They hit her in the back of the head. Yeah, there's like blood on her. Yeah. But you don't see
That's pretty much it. There's not, well, and like you obviously you have a little bit of blood on the corpses and stuff, but like, yeah, it's not gory at all, especially for a film called A Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not, you would expect it to be much more gory than it is. And I think it had to do with the budget as well, because they couldn't afford the special effects.
No.
So they were smart about it in the sense that like when he puts her on that hook, you don't ever really get the full shot from the back. You pretty much get her from the front. So you don't have to worry about
you
like,
never see it.
All the blood.
And so many people like swear that they can remember seeing, you know, the hook going into her flesh. And it's like, no, you never see it. You never see anything. You just see her from the front. And she's hanging in there. And you don't even see, like, if that happened, you'd be like pouring with blood into this bucket and you don't see any of that. And you just see like Leatherface just ignores her. She's screaming, you know, hanging on this hook. And he just like turns his chainsaw on and starts carving up Kirk's body. But again, we don't see any like blood splatters from this or anything. You don't actually see him doing it. You just see kind of, it's really cleverly shot. The way that like the things in the kitchen kind of block your view of the chainsaw cutting Kirk's body.
And it's so funny that there's like this collective memory of it being really violent. Because that's your imagination. That's your collective imagination remembering it that way. Because it's, and it goes back to that, like sometimes it's scarier what you don't see. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where he's so successful in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Like Toby Hooper really wants this to be a PG. And because he kept all of the blood and the gore and there's no sex, there's no nudity, kept all out of it, he thought he'd be okay. But the film was so, because of that, like you said, it's like implied. All happens off screen. It actually made it so much scarier. That's how it ended up being given an X rating.
Well, I think they, in America at least, it was an R. They took
They took it down to an R. It was actually banned over here, I think, for a long time.
Yeah, it was. I think I read that. Your video nasties kind of thing. Yeah. So, and going back to what you were saying, Leatherface is dismembering Kirk, and it's all implied, and it's so. I think what makes it so scary is you're getting all of Pam's reaction.
Yeah.
She's being made to watch her boyfriend become dismembered while hanging on a meat hook. So it's, the whole thing is just horrific.
Jerry goes looking for Pam and Kirk because they haven't come back from their little swimming session.
Yeah, they've been gone a while. Jerry leaves Sally and Franklin kind of chatting by the van, and it's starting to get dark, which is also adding to the feeling of dread. So Jerry finds the house, and we sort of have like a repeat scenario here. Everyone's just an idiot. And so he knocks on the door and
he can hear like some weird noises.
Yeah. He can hear the chainsaw. I thought it was the chainsaw.
No, I don't think it is, because by this point, it's a little while later. He can just hear like some weird noises. I can't remember what they are, but they're just like weird noises from coming inside the house. So he kind of walks in, again, so rude. And he walks into this like in the kitchen and he hears this like weird banging noise coming from this big chest freezer. And he opens it up and we see Pam. And I love this scene.
I jumped. Yeah. I'd forgotten about this. So Pam is sort of like, what, missing her arms? And
she looks dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like lying in there and she looks dead. And then all of a sudden she kind of like leaps up and like is leaning over the side, and Jerry freaks out, and then Leatherface just appears and attacks him from behind and just like whacks him on the head with a mallet, and that's it. He's down.
And there he goes. Yeah. So the part where she pops out of the freezer, it's so disturbing. I feel like I keep using that word because I don't know what else to say. She's got seemingly no arms and legs, and it's just her torso. And I mean, Jesus, I jumped. I don't know if you jumped.
I jumped. It reminds me of, you know, in Seven, where you have like Sloth and you think it's a dead body in the bed, and then suddenly it moves. Suddenly it's alive. It's that kind of feeling where you're like, oh fuck, there's a dead body, and then suddenly it's not a dead body, and that's somehow even scarier than finding like your friend mutilated. It's fucking terrifying. And what I love about this scene is Gunnar Hansen, who played Leatherface, him and Toby Hooper decided that no one was allowed to see him in costume until their first scene together. So whenever, like, this scene was the first scene they filmed with Jerry and Leatherface together, because it's their only scene together, the kind of look of fear and like shock on like his face is real, because they had no idea what Leatherface's costume was like what Gunnar Hansen's costume was like. And can you imagine seeing that? It's fucking terrifying.
It's so scary.
Yeah. And it's just one clean bang and he's gone.
And I like this part as well, because you get Leatherface, I don't know, having some sort of internal conflict or something.
No, this is what I'm saying. This is when it becomes a home invasion film, because he's freaking out. He's like screaming in his mask, people? He's grabbing his head. He just doesn't understand where all these people are. Why are all these people suddenly in his house? His house is suddenly filled with strangers. Like, this is the third one.
He's upset, and he's reacting. And after he's kind of freaks out, like Jenny just said, he sits down with his face in his hands, and it's the first time that you really get a close up of his face with the mask on. And he's kind of like licking his lips, and it's scary.
Because his mask is basic person's face. It's like made of person.
Mm-hmm.
It's the finest of
human.
it's very, very fucked up. So now it's dark now. It's now nighttime.
It is fully dark, and the dark persists. Yeah. So it's gonna be a long night.
Franklin is freaking out. He wants to go back to the gas station and get help, because you know, now we've lost Kirk, Pam, and Jerry.
This is the correct reaction. Yes. You know.
They've disappeared. Get in the fucking van. And like, use the last of your gas to get back to the gas station. But Sally won't. She wants to go look for them. And, you know, she's being a real dick about it, because she's being like, look, you stay here. What, you're going to leave your vulnerable... And Franklin's sad, also upset, because he can't find his knife. And I think the knife, because he is so vulnerable and can't like... I think the knife actually is like a security thing for him. I think it makes him feel safer. And like, if he has his knife on him, and he hasn't got his knife.
100%.
So like, the thought of being left alone, vulnerable, in the dark, while his sister goes off, really freaks him out, and he doesn't want it to happen. He wants his sister, and also he's scared for his sister. You can kind of tell that he feels like shitty that he can't protect her in some way. He's like, no, come on, let's go and get help. And she's like, no, give me the flashlight, give me the flashlight. It's like, what, so you're going to leave your brother alone in the dark?
Right,
in a wheelchair. They're
having this weird like physical struggle over the flashlight, because Franklin doesn't want to give it up. And then Sally's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll just go by myself. And so Franklin's like, well, shit. All right, fine. I'll come after you. And starts trying to push himself through like overgrown underbrush, basically.
Yeah. I think he probably would have fought harder, but he goes around and realizes that the keys aren't in the truck. Like, Jerry or like Kirk, one of them's got the keys anyway, so they can't get away. But he like tries to like wheel after her, and he's struggling, so she's like pushing him a bit. And then as they're going through the woods, and it's, you know, overgrown, and he's struggling, and Franklin's like, wait, Sally, I hear a noise.
Oh my god, this part.
And then that's it. Leatherface appears with a chainsaw and just runs Franklin through.
So this is, to me, the scariest part of the film. Lots and lots of scary parts, but there's something about the, swiftness with which it happens, first of all, because you kind of think they're going to make it back to the house, or they're going to at least get close to the house, because at this point they're still quite near the car. They haven't gone very far.
Nope.
And all of a sudden he pops out. And I mean, there's just nothing Franklin can do. I think it's the helplessness of it. I mean, he just, Leatherface just cuts him open, the front of him.
Yeah,
and you do get some blood here. You do.
Yes, but you do. This is not this
nearly
is...
what you'd get if they were being like realistic.
And I mean, not just that, but because it's dark, like there's no natural light in this. It's supposed to be nighttime. Like the flashlight's kind of gone, so you get the blood splatter, but it's dark, so it's not red, which I think is a lot of the issue with the film censorship. It's the red blood that makes it immediately score higher. So I think that's why how Toby Hooper thought he'd get away with it. It was like, let's do it at nighttime. You can't really see the blood, and therefore we won't get hit with the rating.
Like something else that you said at the beginning, Jenny, which is that it's a folk horror because of the emphasis on their surroundings and, you know, the location, I suppose. So that's true of the house, but it's also true for this whole outside part that takes place between like that main road and the house where all the deaths take place. Like this is the darkness, the branches, all of it, because now you've got Sally obviously screaming and starts running away from him, and Leatherface is chasing her, and he is just cutting through these branches, swinging the thing over the top of his head. She's screaming her head off and running, and it's so dark. You're squinting at the screen, almost trying to kind of make out the shapes, but you can see enough. I mean, you can see enough, and it is petrifying.
Yeah. Now, this is where Sally makes the mistake that happens a lot in these films, and I'm always like, no, I wouldn't do this. So she's out in the middle of nowhere, and she sees a house with some lights on. She runs screaming towards it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you run towards it?
Because I'm in the middle of nowhere, and someone's coming out and killing me, my brother, you know. Chances are that's where they're from. It's the only place around. I would go and find somewhere dark, out of the way and quiet, and I would hide. Don't go running screaming all around the place. You know, find that tarp with all the old cars underneath it and hide. Be quiet.
You're right. Because really, where else would he have come from? But one house he sees, runs towards it, obviously not knowing that it's his, pounding on the door. And then when she doesn't get, like, no one comes to the door, it opens on its own, and she runs upstairs, just again, all the while screaming. It's very intense. And so she runs upstairs into the room, and she sees two people, and she gets up close to them and realizes that it's two corpses.
Yeah.
What we think are corpses.
It's grandma and grandpa corpses. Kind of
hanging out upstairs.
Yeah. Oh, an empty room, Jesus. Just in these like old chairs, like desiccating in their chairs. So Leatherface like cuts open his front door, or the front door, runs in the house. And apparently there's a really funny story, because, you know, he's like, basically, because she starts coming down the stairs and Leatherface comes to the door, so she runs back up the stairs. And apparently in this scene, just before it, Donna Henson was eating, so they have like food on set, and he ate some brownies, not realizing they were pot brownies, and he'd never done drugs before. So during this scene, when he's trying to chase her up the stairs, he's absolutely mashed. Now, can you imagine how fucking scary it would be to see that, like running up the stairs, or try and run up the stairs with this like chainsaw, being absolutely like completely stoned.
That's so funny. That's one I haven't heard. That's a great story.
Again, don't know if it's true. Just one of the many like random stories you hear about the making of this film. But yeah, so it's like stone Leatherface. And I quite like Sally in some ways, because she does a couple of things that I think is really good. She runs up the stairs and she's like, fuck it, and just jumps out the window.
Oh, jumping through the second story window, and not an open window.
No.
Like, she smashes the glass like the Kool-Aid man. Like, it's amazing. Also, bear in mind, she does this with no bra on, because it's the 70s. What a legend.
Yeah, exactly. So she kind of jumps and she runs. And she's running and running, and Leatherface is chasing her. Another fact was apparently in real, you know, Gunnar Henson, even in those like big clunky boots, was actually still a faster runner than Marilyn Burns, who plays Sally. That's why, like, if you're watching the scenes where he's chasing her, at some points he just stops with his chainsaw and starts like hacking up trees. It's because he had to do weird things, because it was clear that he was faster than her if they were just running.
See, I didn't even notice that.
He kind of like zigzags and things.
Okay, I mean, I know I read in my research that that Gunnar Hansen did when he was researching his part, he was observing and reading about like kids with disabilities, basically
Yes.
like mental disabilities. So his movements are very clumsy and kind of off kilter, but he's fast and he's determined. I never got the so that's why it's really cool to hear that, because I never knew that. I didn't get the feeling that he was outrunning her. I just got the feeling that he was cl so close,
Because it's
but
almost like slapstick at this point, because he's running and like he gets really, really close to her, and then all of a sudden he's just like waving his chainsaw
I
around.
didn't notice. I just was like, he's
It's
gonna
almost
get her,
funny.
run. I didn't see that, but she's screaming, and so eventually she gets to the gas station, runs inside, and the guy is just immediately, everything he does is super strange. He's like trying to like hold her, and she's obviously completely freaking out. I mean, she's almost having a fit, and he's trying to hold her and touch her face. And this is really strange. And then he says that there's no phone, so he's gonna go and get the truck and drive her to the hospital. Is that where I think he said he was gonna take her? Are you there?
Oh,
Did I
to the
miss you?
sheriff. He sorry, I was just trying to think. He's like, yeah, I'll take you to the sheriff. It's all okay. Let me go get the truck. And
Oh, to
like
the sheriff. That's what it was. Okay,
and
yeah.
he like goes out and then he comes in and like he's been really like soothing, like, yeah, don't worry, everything will be okay. And then he comes
No, it was
in.
weird, right? Like he was trying to touch her face. Like it was weird. I thought
And
that
he
was all very strange.
and then he walks in with like a sack.
So wait a sec. I wanted to say something though, because this part where he goes out to get, I think he says he's going to get the truck, which he does. You kind of see it outside. But sure, there's a lot of shots here of Sally just like sitting there freaking out. I mean,
The one of her
I just
eye.
must it. Like I yeah, it's just a lot of camera work is, it's strange, but I just think her acting is so good. Like she's so believable. There's never a sense ever that she's not like fully fucking committed. Like her performance is, I'm just praising her performance because it's very believable and she sustains it for such a long period of time. Yeah, my props to her. What's her, the actress? What's she called?
Marilyn Burns.
Marilyn Burns. And then there's also this part where she's kind of looking at the barbecue oven. There's like some strange shots there, and I kept thinking like, what's going on here? But yeah, then as you were saying, the gas station guy comes back with like rope and a sack, and he's like starts
And
hitting her with a broom.
he's like, don't let no, let's not be silly now. Just like basically like just get in my sack. Everything's gonna be okay. And yeah, and
Weird.
then she like backs up. Yeah, and he just starts like poking her with a broom and hitting her until he knocks her out with a broom.
Like an animal, like he's treating her like you would like an animal that you're taking to the slaughter. But it's also this moment when you realize that he's not going to help her.
No.
That's just devastating. You're just like, no, fuck, Sally. God damn it. Why does Capricorn have to be in Saturn? So he eventually, the gas station guy manages to knock her out and essentially kidnaps her. And while they're in the car, yeah, he keeps poking her with a stick. Like she's just absolutely howling. The gas station guy, while they're in the truck, he sees a hitchhiker. And he picks up the hitchhiker, and he accuses him of grave robbing from earlier. So you kind of find out that it was the weird hitchhiker that was doing
Oh
that.
yeah. He's like, I why did you leave? You should be with your brother.
Yeah. And so then he, so the gas station attendant takes Sally and the hitchhiker back to the house. So here we are back at this house. And then that's when you kind of fig like you learn that Leatherface and the hitchhiker are brothers.
Yes, because and like we assume that at this point that the gas station guy is like their dad, just from the way he's acting around them.
See, I didn't, is he the dad? I didn't get, I just got him as like a weird friend. It's just,
I
he's
assume by
like,
the way that he was like beating them and things, and then he says later about like going to get grandpa.
yeah, maybe. So the hitchhiker ties up Sally, and she's just again with the screaming. And this is a very good scream. It's like a very hair-raising scream.
And like this whole dinner scene, like in memory, feels like it's like 40 minutes long, where actually I think like this whole scene is about 8 minutes long, but it feels so much longer, like so much more distressing. So yeah, the hitchhiker like ties her up.
Well, and you get this family dynamic thing going on. Like, they wheel Grandpa down the stairs.
Yeah.
It's the corpse from earlier, or at least that you thought was a corpse, but it's Grandpa, like, barely alive. And so you have this just, it's insanity. It's this family with a collective sense of insanity. And Sally is sort of the other, right? Not only because she's the only female, but the only normal one here.
Yeah.
And her reaction to all of this is the one that we identify with, because we, as the normal, you know, observers, are seeing it as this insanity. I mean, even the whole thing. So they're basically, they cut Sally's finger and put the finger up to the grandpa's mouth so that he can suck blood from it.
Yeah.
And while this is happening, it's so overwhelming, she just passes the fuck out.
Yeah.
And this is frankly a little bit of a relief at this point, because it's been so relentless. And even then, it's only like respite for like 2 seconds, but
yeah. She like blacks out. But yeah, like, so much about this is weird. Like, you have the fact that, yeah, like the gas station guy's like, oh, don't you worry, we'll fix you something to eat real soon. Like, that's what she's worried about. But yeah, so like I said, they cut Sally's finger and put it in Grandpa's mouth. He really cut her finger.
Yeah, I figured you'd want to like tell that, because they had like a pump that was supposed to push fake blood out of the finger to make it look
like it was really bleeding
or something, right?
Yeah, and I think like Gunnar Hansen basically had a knife with like tape on it, basically, so that when he did it, it wouldn't actually cut her, and like this little like vial thing to pop for the blood, and they had to film this scene like, I think it something like 16 hours or something crazy they filmed this scene for.
Oh my gosh.
And he was getting really frustrated. So without saying anything to anyone, including Marilyn Burns, but apparently they were friends, so it might, you know, maybe slightly better than if it was just like some random guy, he pulled the tape off the knife and actually cut her finger. So like, the blood is real, her scream is real, like the pain is real at that point. It really was. I'm not sure if the bit where it's in Grandpa's mouth was the same bit, because I don't think he would have actually like sucked her blood, but who knows, it was the 70s. I love the fact that like Grandpa as well is like super old, but actually it was like some 18-year-old kid inside actually playing.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, it's like they just got some like one of their friends or someone from like the crew, and they just put him in like loads and loads and loads of makeup and like powder.
The makeup was creepy. Grandpa was definitely, I mean, they achieved corpse like look, you know, they were successful in that regard.
Yep.
But yeah, so Sally, after passing out, awakens at the table and takes one look and immediately starts screaming. And what's looking back at her is Grandpa, the hitchhiker, and Leatherface, now dressed as a woman.
Yep.
And they all start screaming with her. And it's just, I mean, it's level 10 the whole time. Like, from here, it's just level 10. Immediately she wakes up and it's level 10.
But I love the fact at this point that Leatherface is now, like, his mask is like a woman's face. It's got like lipstick and things on, because he's been preparing the dinner. He's been doing the domestic jobs. There are no women in this household. There's a corpse of an old lady upstairs, but there's no like mother or anyone that we see. There's no like matriarch of the family alive. So Leatherface, when he does the domestic duties, apparently dresses up like a woman in a woman's suit.
So scary. And he's got this like black wig. So then the hitchhiker and the gas station guy start to argue. And the screaming at the table goes on almost, in my opinion, like a fraction too long.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too long that I would ever dislike it. It's too long and it makes you uncomfortable and it makes you wish it would stop. And so it's a great, I don't know. It's a great thing to make the audience feel like, how far can you push this? And he pushes it just that little bit, Toby Hooper, and then he brings it back and it's fine. But you've got Leatherface is just terrorizing Sally. And it's funny because then they decide that it's time for Grandpa gets to have a whack. He's so good at killing.
Well, I love this as well, because you find out, like, because the hitchhiker starts saying about, you know, the gas station guy, like, oh, he's just a cook because he doesn't like killing. He makes them do all the work. And he's like, yeah, I just can't take no pleasure from killing someone. It's just a job that has to be done. He likes to cook the food, like make the barbecue. He doesn't like to do the killing. He didn't work in the slaughterhouse. But Grandpa, Grandpa, and that's why he's like, right, let's stop dragging this out now. Let's just, you know, let's just kill the girl. You know, there's no point torturing her anymore. So they go and get like the bucket, the metal bucket. And yeah, like they're like, oh, let's let Grandpa have a go. He was always the best. And the gas station guy's like, oh, don't you cry. There's no need to cry. You're going to be okay. You know, and he just one hit and he does it. You know, there'll be no pain or anything. Like, that's going to make her feel any better.
I know. He's like consoling her. But so they get this metal bucket, which is bloody and gross. And they've got an axe, but it's like a really small axe.
It's a hammer.
Is it a hammer?
Yeah, okay, it's like a mallet. Yeah.
Well, it's like, what are you doing here? Like, are you going to beat her head in over the bucket? Like, I thought the axe was like for the head to fall into or to catch the blood. I wasn't sure.
It's to catch the mess, basically. But yeah, the whole thing is that they kill the people the same way that they killed the cows at the slaughterhouse. So it's like a mallet. Like,
gotcha, that makes sense.
It's supposed to be one clean hit to the back of the head and that's it. They're gone. But yeah,
right.
Like, that's not what happens.
That is not what happens. So Leatherface goes to, I don't know, position Grandpa. It's funny because he's almost tender with Grandpa. And so, yeah. And so then they wheel him up and they're trying to put the mallet in his hand and he keeps dropping it. And you have all these really jarring shots of her screaming. And like you were saying before, like these close-ups of her eyeballs, like darting around. It's, again, like when I said we dial it up to 10 and leave there, that's exactly what's happening here. So I thought they were trying to chop her out with an axe. I'm wrong. But yeah, so Grandpa can't hang and he keeps dropping the mallet. And so she finally, this literally goes 3 or 4 times that he just can't hold it. But she finally gets loose and jumps through her second window of the night.
Yep.
Again, not open. It jumps through the glass. And Leatherface chases her outside, and you now see that it's broad daylight, which in some ways is almost scarier.
Yeah, because right? It's like they're supposed to be having dinner, but how is it suddenly like?
Well, because she passed out, right? And then, but yeah, maybe she was only passed out a few minutes, but
it just, yeah, it was all just very strange. But yeah, like you said, it does make it like, because you're suddenly even more disorientated, especially because they did get a couple of hits on the back of her head. You see she's got this like head wound. There's like, she's covered in blood. At this point, a lot of this was, you know, was real blood, because she did really cut herself, like doing the jumps out the windows and running through the trees. She got really badly cut up doing this. So a lot of the blood you see is real.
Like, they were all pretty beat up at the end of it. I think there was no HR happening here whatsoever.
No, I don't think he was very popular with the with the cast at the end of this.
But now you've got Sally running, Leatherface chasing her, the hitchhiker chasing Leatherface. And as they're all sort of winding up and down this road, and again, just the screaming and a truck out of nowhere hits the hitchhiker and kills him.
Yep. It's the gas truck coming to save the day.
It is. So the gas, this is the guy that gets out, right?
Yeah.
He gets out of the car. So he pulls over and Sally's just like screaming and runs up to him, and he sees Leatherface running after her. And so they both kind of jump through the car to the other side. Like, they open the door and then go through the other door. Over the front seat.
Yeah, yeah. He climbs
and the
through.
Truck driver, he gets like a wrench, I think, or something.
Yeah,
sort of,
it's just something he obviously has, like a weapon, like lying on the
footwell. Yeah. He kind of attacks Leatherface.
Yeah.
And injures him. And Leatherface falls down and cuts his own leg open
with the chainsaw, which is the only real like time you see, like I said, you don't see the chainsaw actually cutting anyone at any point apart from this, when it's actually cutting Leatherface's own leg and he's like screaming. Because yeah, I love the fact that like they're running, and this is like, the truck is like a big guy, and yeah, he just turns around and throws this wrench and like cracks Leatherface in the head, and Leatherface just goes down and drops it and starts screaming. And then while this is happening, there's like a truck, just a normal like pickup truck,
like a pickup,
driving the opposite direction, and Sally like runs in front of it covered in blood, and the pickup truck like does like a U-turn. And she runs and like gets in the back. So she's going one way in the pickup truck. And then I'm guessing the other truck driver is just like running the other way up the road.
You mean the first truck driver? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote like, where did he go? I think he like just kind of escapes. Like
he just runs. He just goes. Like Leatherface, as soon as he knocks Leatherface down, he's just out of there, like running up this road. But yeah, so Sally's like jumping into the back of it, and she's like holding on and screaming and laughing, and she's just covered in blood. And then you have like that iconic shot of Leatherface just like standing in the road in this amazing like orange sunlight, just like yelling and spinning and like almost like dancing around with this chainsaw around.
It's like he's so frustrated that she got away. I actually wrote dancing as well because that's how I viewed it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she gets away and you've got this sort of crescendo of like music and chainsaw sounds, and then it just cuts super abruptly and it's the end of the film.
Yep, that's the end of the film.
You literally, there's no come down. There's no, no come down.
There's no
respite.
No, relief. There's no yeah. kind of, she doesn't get her revenge. You know, she
no.
doesn't need to kill him. Because this is the thing, like Sally is one of the first final girls. But that also means that she doesn't get a lot of the benefits of being a final girl. Like normally the reason why we like final girls so much is that it gives us somebody to focus on who isn't usually the male killer. And so we kind of get to witness the whole film through somebody's eyes, and we know that no matter what, deep down, they're probably going to be okay. And with Sally, it's different. Like, so she doesn't get this kind of, there's no like plucky detective that comes and saves the, you know, that does an investigation and saves the day. There's none of this. She escapes clinging to, on like manically laughing on the back of a truck. Like, she is not okay.
No,
whatsoever.
She is not okay. She, I think, like her life, that's she lived, she's never gonna be okay. But yeah. There's no, yeah, I see what you mean. It's almost like there's no not conclusion, because there is a conclusion, but there's no resolution. There's no like tying up loose ends. There's no,
it's not like any other film, you know, like the end of a Freddy film or, you know, a Halloween film where Michael Myers gets stabbed or burnt or shot and you think he's dead for a few seconds. None of that happens. Leatherface is still out there. Leatherface is just like spinning around. Grandpa and gas station guy are still there. Yeah, the hitchhiker's dead, but he's the only one who is. The rest of them are all fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way that the music cuts, like, so the abruptness of it all, I just, it's a vibe. It passes the vibe check.
Yeah.
100%. You're left with just your mouth open, your eyes wide, just like, what the fuck just happened to me? Which is the best thing for a movie to make me feel, I feel. Like.
Absolutely.
That's what I want from a horror movie. So yeah, I was kind of thinking about what you said earlier about it being a perfect film and like, what would you change, if anything? I mean, I really don't think I would change anything.
No, I don't think I would. Normally we go on and on about how we like to get to know the characters well, because that makes you, you know, you need to be able to care about the characters. And I just think this is kind of one instance where I don't need to know them any better, you know?
Well, I mean, you do get to know them enough. What you learn is enough. And there's also fewer of them than there usually are. If you think about how very often, you know, gosh, look at Friday the 13th. There's like 14, 15 kids.
Yeah.
You know, I can't keep track of them. All the counselors and whatnot. And here you had 5. And how many is in the cast in the whole film? What, 9 people?
Yeah, so pretty much.
It's even though you don't spend a ton of time getting to know them, you don't have like a lot of character arc. You have enough that you still care about them.
Absolutely.
But I think really it's the intrigue of Leatherface, I think, as well, because they leave you wanting, who is this person? What happened to him? What is he doing? What is going on? There's no even offered explanation for any of his actions, and it's that there is no reason for it. That explanation in and of itself makes it scary. He's literally just insane.
Yeah. He's just driven by, it's like his family have been working in the slaughterhouse for generations, and that's all he knows how to do. And he views anything living outside of his family as meat for the slaughter.
Yeah. Do you think they're eating the people?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are. Okay,
yeah,
that's what I thought too. Like, well, she's in the freezer. Like, clearly he's saving her for later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the Ed Gein, is that how you say it?
Like, yeah, Ed Gein.
I mean, that whole story is scary. And so pulling bits of that to as inspiration for this, I love that. But
yeah,
it's my serial killer, my love of serial killer.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the, you know, all the furniture made of of body parts and like the skin suit and things like that, because the whole thing with Guillaume was the two women that he did kill, but he got found out basically straight away after killing them that he was making a woman suit so that he could pretend to be his dead mother, because it's always the moms that drive these guys crazy. So yeah, like
don't be that mom.
I'm gonna try really hard not to be. I'm gonna try really hard not to raise a serial killer.
But really quick before we go, I did want to just get your thoughts on the final girl thing, because like you were saying, I liked Sally. I didn't have issues with Sally.
No, I mean, I don't Sally either.
She wasn't like a fighter, you know, like how you think of Sydney Prescott or how you think of Ripley. It wasn't like that, but she still was a survivor. I mean, she jumped through two glass windows. Come on now. From second stories.
She's good. And but like I said, because this film came out the same year as Black Christmas, so like, you know, Final Girls were a kind of a slasher thing. So technically Sally is probably the first Final Girl.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure came out before Black Christmas did, because Black Christmas probably came out around Christmas, like at least Halloween. I think this came out earlier in the year. So yeah, I think Sally is our first kind of final girl. But yeah, like she takes a beating and she keeps going, but there's no kind of redemption for her at the end. Like she doesn't get her revenge.
Yeah, she doesn't get her revenge, and you don't get it. As much the thoroughness of her character and her arc, her story, you don't get that like you do with the other ones.
Yeah.
Like off the top of my head that I'm thinking of, the final girls, you know?
Yeah. But like we said, like it's an excellent film. I don't think there's anything I would change. I think it has absolutely perfect pacing. It's brutal without being kind of over the top, like torture porn gory. It was innovative. It still hits every fucking time I watch it. It just makes me tense. So yeah, this to me, I can't think of a better film for us to celebrate our 50th episode with.
Happy 50th episode, lover.
Happy 50th episode. And it's been a long one. I think we've been recording for over 2 hours now. But I think it's probably going to be one of my favorite ones we've done.
We've got to do the homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? We have to come correct, like we did
exactly.
with Rosemary's Baby.
Exactly.
This is how it goes.
Exactly.
But we will say, please, if you don't already, subscribe, follow, find us. We're everywhere. We've linked our Instagram and our Twitter. We love seeing you guys and interacting with you.
We'd love to hear about your thoughts on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Is there anything you would change about it? Do you have a memory of like the first time seeing it? And yeah, like Kitten said, if you can rate, a review, follow, or subscribe to our podcast, especially on Apple Music and Spotify, it really, really helps us. So yeah, thank you for listening to us talk about such a perfect fucking film for 2 hours.
We'll see you on the other side of 50. Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.
Bye. 50th episode. Bye.